Are you going to make the next talk on your own, or both of you? All right.
Can I put this off when I'm talking?
Okay.
So good morning, everybody. I'm happy to talk here to you today in this beautiful hall. I'm Thijs de Vos. I'm a medical doctor and a researcher currently at the Leiden University Medical Center and also in St. Quirin, Amsterdam. I'm here together with Marcia de Haas. She's a professor in translational immunohematology. And I will tell you something about our current work. And some parts were already discussed by Rachel, so I will skip some parts. Besides a researcher, I'm a proud dad of Olivier. He came here today with me and Kimberly. And besides this, I like to bake in my spare time. I was a finalist in the Le Meilleur Pâtissier, but the Dutch version, and yeah. I'm looking forward to enjoy the French patisserie as well. However, today we will talk about FNAITE, and in the first part of my talk, I'll briefly discuss the study that we've done to compare the clinical outcome between HPA1A and HPA5B mediated disease. In the second part of my talk, I'll talk about antenatal treatment strategies, and the last part of my talk, I'll focus on the postnatal treatment strategies. So over here you can see you see the cell membrane of a platelet and the expression of different glycoproteins. And on these glycoproteins, these HPAs are present and in most frequently involved in FNAITE is HPA1A, and the second most is HPA5B. And we observed that HPA5B is present in 1.8% of the pregnant women, whereas anti-HPA1A is present in 0.2% of the pregnant women. And this is in contrast with the prevalence of antibodies in FNAITE cases. And therefore, we thought that the presence of anti-HPA5B, because almost 2% of the women that have can have these antibodies, the finding of these antibodies might be just a finding by chance and not related to the clinical bleeding symptoms or thrombocytopenia. So therefore, we did a retrospective cohort study, and our questions were, question that we had is we'd like to compare the clinical outcome, but another question we had, did it go even further, is anti-HPA5B really associated with clinical FNAITE, or is it just a finding by chance? And for clinicians or people that work with clinicians, this is of course also an important question, because you should also consider to adapt clinical management. Some treatments are very expensive, like IVIG treatment during pregnancy, and is there evidence to find to show that clinical management should be adapted in HPA5B mediated disease compared to HPA1A mediated disease? So we did a study. I will skip this slide because you've already seen it before. And one of the major findings that we have is that indeed other risk factors for neonatal thrombocytopenia, as shown above, was more prevalent in the HPA5B group compared to the HPA1A group. So this fitted to our thought that HPA5B could be a finding by chance. However, there were also some other insights, is that severe bleeding was occurring in the same rates in both groups. And there were some cases that did not have any other risk factors, but only the HPA incompatibility and HPA5B antibodies present, and this could be the only cause of the bleedings. So therefore, this fitted not to our thought that HPA5B was just a finding by chance. And therefore, we looked further into the details of our study, and we found that 60 cases had anti-HPA5B, and 161 cases at anti-HPA1A. And these rates are higher compared to the rates that were found in positive prospective screening studies that I mentioned before. But HPA antibodies can be only causal if there is an incompatibility between the mother and the fetus. So we performed HPA typing in all these mothers and fetuses or fathers. and we calculated the expected rate that we, if NTHPA was 5B or 1A was just a finding by chance, we calculated the expected HPA incompatibility rates based on the allele frequencies in the general population. But we found an overrepresentation, so a higher rate of incompatibility compared to the general population. And based on these conclusions, we stated that NTHPA 5B cannot be just a finding by chance, but is associated with clinical bleeding symptoms. And of course, you see also the figures as shown by Rachel that HPA 5B seems less severe, but it can lead to bleeding symptoms, severe bleeding symptoms in some cases. So then I would like to deliberate a little bit about how is this difference caused. Of course, HPA 5B is expressed by a different glycoprotein. So perhaps the interference between the antibody binding and the function of the target of the in the cell can lead to these differences, or otherwise the difference in expression level can explain the differences in the pathogenesis of this disease. So as mentioned before, we are currently performing the HIP study, and we're almost finished with the data collection. We have to do the final research, and then I can show you the results. Unfortunately, not today. I would love to, but we have to wait a little bit longer. we observed NTHPA of 1A in 10% of the pregnant women. And I think this flowchart shows the tremendous amount of work that we had to select these women. So we are also keen to look into the results yet, but we are still blinded now. So to conclude, HPA 5B can rarely lead to severe bleeding, and therefore I think it is important to focus on developing assays that can predict disease severity, because as in rhesus disease or in allo immunization on red cells, we know that, for example, the titer or ADCC test or the Dopplers can show the anemia in the child. But for FNAIT, this is more difficult. You cannot predict disease severity yet. And this is, I think, we have to work on worldwide together, just because this is such an important problem. I'll focus now on the second part of my talk, because most bleedings occur already when the child is still in the womb. Therefore, I think the optimal treatment for these children is during pregnancy, and the window of opportunity to prevent bleeding in these children is during pregnancy. So which antenatal treatment is recommended in FNAIT? Therefore, you have to realize that in index pregnancies, so the first diagnosed child, antenatal treatment is often not possible, because these children are diagnosed when they were born and had bleeding symptoms. So therefore, in first diagnosed cases or index pregnancies, antenatal treatment is often too late. And in second pregnancies, subsequent pregnancies, antenatal treatment is possible. We've performed, actually Dion, the one that was on the project before, performed a nice systematic review, and she concluded that in 98.7% of the IVIG-treated pregnancies, bleeding was prevented. And this was almost the same in cases that were treated with intrauterine platelet transfusions. However, this treatment was associated with high risk of complications. In around 10% of the pregnancies, complications occurred, leading to death in 32%, so one-third of the complicated pregnancies. And of course, one of the most feared complications is the occurrence of intrauterine bleeding, because these children are at risk for bleeding. And if you perform an intrauterine transfusion, I think this is your worst nightmare as a fetal therapist. So therefore, we advise to administer IVIG, so intravenous immunoglobulins, weekly to the mother, because this has a lower risk on complications. Since we don't have currently We don't have the opportunity to predict disease severity during pregnancy, so therefore our treatment regime is based on the outcome of the previous pregnancy. So if an intracranial hemorrhage is observed during pregnancy, of course, you consider together with your team whether what is the expected neurological outcome, and also in contact with the parents. And if you continue pregnancy, you start with treatment with 1 gram per kg per week and perform a cesarean section around 34 weeks of pregnancy. And in cases that had a previous pregnancy with a severe bleeding, maternal treatment is started early, so between 12 and 16 weeks, so at the end of the first trimester, with a high dosage, and delivery is planned around 36 weeks. And if there was no bleeding in the previous pregnancy, you start with a lower dosage and you start also a little bit later. And then one of the things that I ask myself is, what is the outcome of these children on the long term? Because we give these children fetal therapy, and how do the children develop on the long term? And I had the opportunity to see all these children, also with their brothers and sisters, that were affected by FNAIT. And in the end, we observed, or we included 41 cases that were treated with IVIG with a median age of 9 years old, which is quite, I think, long for a long-term follow-up study in children. And the clinical characteristics you can see above: the children were born term and had a normal birth weight. However, we observed bleeding in 3 children, and in 1 child, bleeding was observed at the 27th week of pregnancy, while IVIG treatment was planned to start at the 28th week of pregnancy. And after this, we also adapted our guidelines to start a little bit earlier with IVIG. And you see that the median platelet count is 65 in these children. IQ score, mean IQ score was 104, which is a little bit above average. And we also performed a neurological assessment, and there were no severe neurodevelopmental impairment observed in this group. So, and also all cases with intracranial hemorrhage had normal neurodevelopmental outcome, and we did not observe any adverse outcome defined as severe NDI or perinatal death. So we conclude that the neurodevelopmental outcome of these children is comparable to the general population. Then to the last part of my talk about the postnatal treatment strategies. Because we did a retrospective study in the Netherlands, and we observed that there was a large variety on the application of postnatal treatment, and therefore we questioned, is this also in an international perspective? How are these children treated after birth internationally? So we aimed to describe the postnatal treatment and the clinical outcome of these children in an international context. And we performed a study together with groups from Spain, Australia, Slovenia, Sweden and Norway, and the USA. And as I mentioned before, most children were diagnosed postnatally, because of the 34% of the children, so the 138 that were diagnosed antenatally, the main proportion, so the 122 cases, were diagnosed because these children were had a previous child, or this family had a previous child with FNAIT. And antenatal treatment was applied in 107 cases. And this was the case because in Norway, they don't treat all pregnancies, alloimmunized pregnancies, directly with IVIG. In their country, it depends on the antibody titer and also the history of the pregnancy. And you see that there's an overrepresentation of male infants and children with a low birth weight. And I think this also fits to the previous speaker, Rachel, mentioned a very nice study of Yugbara, which showed that there is an interaction between the antibodies and also the growth and the placenta. And in this graph, you can see that there's a very large variety on the postnatal treatment in FNAIT. So most cases were treated with either IVIG or transfusions, and around 1/3 of the children did not receive any treatment. However, we have to realize that half of the children that didn't receive postnatal treatment did receive antenatal treatment. And then you see that a small proportion of the children received IVIG only, and a lot of children received platelet transfusion, either random platelet transfusions or matched platelet transfusions. And in random platelet transfusions, they're just from a random donor. These donors are not typed for the HPA that is implicated in the disease. And matched platelet transfusions, the donor is typed, and the platelets that are given to the neonate are negative for the HPA that is implicated. In other words, the antibodies that might still circulate in the child cannot bind to the donor platelets. And it is thought that these platelets might give a higher increment or perhaps more effective. We don't know. We did not evaluate in randomized trials, but this is the rationale behind this, this difference in transfusions. And I already mentioned that I was surprised by the variety that of the treatment that was given in different countries. You see that in Norway and the Netherlands, many neonates received matched transfusions. However, in some countries, they did not give any matched transfusions to the neonates. So I think I want to highlight the extensive heterogeneity on the postnatal treatment that is given to these children. And also, there's a large variation in the administration of matched transfusions. In this graph, you see the platelet count in the first week of life. In the first graph, you see that, please be aware of the log scale over here. This I did because in this way, you can see the lower platelet counts more easily. So here you see the line of 25 and 50. And in the no treatment group, the platelet counts also in the first days of life were higher, which is logical because these children didn't receive any postnatal treatment. And then you see that in the other groups, median platelet counts were extremely low, even below 10 in many cases. So these children are very sick after birth. And then platelet counts, median platelet counts rise, either in the matched, also in the random donor group, and in the only IVIG treatment group, it seems, but this study was not designed to evaluate efficacy of treatment. This I want to underline, but you see that the increment is a little less steep. However, these children had also a little bit higher median platelet counts compared to the other groups. So which postnatal treatment strategy should I advise to neonatologists? Because for this, I would like to underline that recommendations on these treatments guidelines are just based on expert opinions. We did not perform a randomized trial in children that were affected by FNAIT, and I think it's also not feasible to do this in near future. But still, we have to advise something that to the physicians that face these sick children. And the main outcome would be to prevent severe bleeding in these children. And of course, we try to look in the occurrence of severe bleeding in these groups. However, it was very difficult to determine the exact timing in this postnatal study design. So therefore, I think we have to look prospectively to different groups and really look into the details of the occurrence of bleeding and when did these bleedings develop. However, we observed that there were some countries, for example, Norway and the Netherlands, that had preference for matched products. However, I question whether this is justified or not. And IVIG treatment, it seems that it is less effective compared to the platelet transfusion. So therefore, we advise, also based on other studies performed, this is not as a first-line treatment. So if you have an infant with FNAIT, treatment, I think, regime is based on the platelet counts and also on the occurrence of bleeding. So in cases that have a platelet count below 25, I would advise to give a platelet transfusion. And if HPA types and matched products are available, I think this is first choice treatment, but only if it's quick available. And I would not rather wait for a day on a matched transfusion, but an IVIG treatment, I think, is not as a first line treatment. But in cases that are actively bleeding, I would say that the transfusion threshold of 50 is more is better. So this was I think the main part of my talk, we have a very nice observational study, which is, I think, I'm very enthusiastic about this study, and I'm very looking forward to perform the analysis in this cohort of the HIP study to look at the natural course of the HPA immunized cases. And also, I would like to present in near future the long-term neurodevelopmental outcome of children of the brothers and sisters that I showed you before of the index cases affected by FNAIT. And we're currently performing also a cost-effectiveness analysis. And I'm not doing this by myself, but with a great team working all from their own expertise. And I'd like to thank you again to be in Paris today, because it's inspiring to be here and get a little bit of French lessons. So thank you very much.